Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 119 of the Pico Serenity podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emelson, and joining me, we have my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, Alpha did indeed arrive. Anomaly's prediction was correct.
I called it a month ago, called it 3 weeks ago, called it 2 weeks ago. I mean, I was locked in.
Alpha came out this Thursday, this past Thursday, July 14th, and at least one of us has Alpha. Is it you?
No, yeah. You got it. Like from last,
I got Alpha
to first.
This time. So this is I got into the pity beta in MOP when they like did the like load testing of the early zones and stuff, yeah. And then from there I didn't get into beta until BFA, where I got into the beta on the back of like Squishy asking Babs if there are any theory people that like would use beta access, and so I got it through that.
Nice.
And I didn't get Shadowlands beta. Ooh. But now I'm on the friends and family list, so I got Alpha. And the whole time We were joking about how like my sudden necessary email change was going to mean I was like not going to get Alpha.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would have been hilarious and awful, but I am in, and that it is awesome. Great. And that is going to be the subject of our show today, basically, is Dragonflight Alpha. Before we get into that, we do have a couple of quick things, but we are going to be real quick on those today because there is so much Dragonflight news to talk about.
Yeah, and I think the only thing that I wanted to bring up was that Blizzard did talk about them expanding the Great Push for Season 4. So Great Push is their like teams try and do the highest level keys they can do. Team that does the cumulative highest level keys wins over the course of a weekend. It's my favorite version of WoW PvE, I think, like competitive PvE. So what they're doing this time is they're changing the format slightly. It used to just be a bunch of teams all at once trying to go for this. They've now split this up into three different regions. So there'll be a regional for America and Asia Pac, a region for China, a region for EMEA. And then the top two teams from each of those regions will go to the grand finals and compete for the grand final prize. So a lot more Great Push action. This is all occurring at the end of August. And it is open sign up. So you can actually get an item in game if you time 2+15s on the tournament realm. So if you want little item, or if you have a team that you want to sign up and try and go for the gold here, you can do that too. But yeah, it's really cool event. I think it starts the 19th is the America regional finals of August. Then it's every weekend after that. So it's America, Europe. I don't think they're televising China. And then September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th is the global finals. Awesome. More great push action coming.
That's right around the time that Wrath of the Lich King comes out.
Exactly. Which
leading right into that.
Yeah.
Well, I did want to briefly mention. So, like, Anom's team is on vacation, I think, still. Yes. So they're not raiding. We're reclearing to get people CE, and I'm gonna just real quickly throw out there: do not disrespect Anduin because he will fuck you up. That's all. That is all.
So not the pushover people say, huh?
Even after all the nerfs, it's still like it still will kill you if you do not respect it. This is basically it. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Dragonflight Alpha. Okay. So let's, I guess you want to briefly like give a rundown of what is in this build of the Alpha.
Sure.
And then we can jump into some of the interviews and some of our thoughts on the stuff. So, first off, I'm just going to throw out there, no monk talents. There's some data mining we'll get to later, maybe. No monk talent trees. What is there is there's a list of, I think, 5 or 6 classes that have talent trees built that you can create on the Alpha Realm at level 60 and play. And then you can take a teleporter to one zone, the Azure Span, and doing so bumps you up to level 65, so you get to play around with a little bit more of the talent tree. And in that zone, you get to do dragon riding, you get to do the questing experience. There are no dungeons unlocked, but if you stay at level 60, you can go and do, or I guess even at 65, you could go and do Shadowlands Mythic Dungeons. And that's effectively it. Most of the profession stuff is disabled. Of course, there's no dungeons out yet, but the other three Dragonflight zones are not enabled. The Drakthyr / Evoker starting experience is disabled. And so everybody is kind of playing in that same experience, testing out the same bit of content.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think so. Yeah, so it's very, very, I think, narrow in terms of scope from an alpha release, which typically you see, we see like with every other alpha that has come out, it's generally not been like the middle zone. It's generally been like you get the first three levels of content, right? And that's all we've sort of fleshed out. And there's definitely going to be some broken stuff out there. So slightly different in terms of how they focused it. But then the one thing, the one thing that an interview with Morgan Day, where he mentioned that, in terms of the way that they're treating this alpha, they're treating it slightly different the way they'll test it, which is much more focused testing. So the idea that you start in a zone, you can only do stuff in that zone, and you're very either locked down to that level or that slight level range, is something they're going to take forward, which means, like, to be fair, in this week or even next week, right, they may shut down the Azure span and enable a different zone. That's the only zone you can go in. Yeah. So treating this alpha, I think, slightly different in terms of the way that they're testing it. Much more, I think Morgan gives the analogy of like much more the way they do raid testing. But now lots, I mean, to be fair, even just with that, lots of at least interesting content there. And I'm honestly glad that they started by including dragon riding, right? Because I think that was like, of all the, like, if you think about the major cornerstone features coming in Dragonflight, there's not a lot. Like, there's a new class and a new race, there's new talent overlap, but like in terms of like things that you as an individual mostly, like, you're not going to see every different class's talent changes, right? You'll see the one you play the most.
But
dragon riding is like that core thing. I think it's like, the, to me, dragon riding is like almost like the Azerite armor, like the artifact weapon of Dragonflight coming up, right? But it sounds like, so maybe we can jump into that one to start with. It sounds like though the feedback there is great. Like it feels good. I don't think I've heard one person say a bad thing about it. You haven't been to play it.
Yeah, it's really good. I really like it. I gave some alpha. I actually need to go back and remember to do this. I need to get back on the alpha forums and be like, please change the sound effect for when you're going really fast, because it sounds like I'm in an airplane. I don't want to sound like I'm in an airplane when I'm on a dragon. Like, fair. But that's such a nitpick, right?
It is, yeah.
A lot of
that's your only complaint is like the sound. Like, I feel like they kind of did a good, they did an okay job. Okay job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's not my only complaint. There's one other complaint, and I don't know how much of this is like, so in one of the, I don't know if it was the Morgan Day interview or if it was one of Ian Hazzikostas' interviews, where they confirmed that the level of dragon riding that we have when we're questing the Azure span is reflective of like, you're 3 hours into the expansion, very early in the experience, just like got the basics. But one of the things I ran into is, I guess for a real quick refresher for people that maybe haven't been keeping up with it or have forgotten the essence of dragon riding. It's basically gliding on steroids. if you've played Demon Hunter, you know about gliding. It's gliding on steroids. You have the ability, like, you're at a base level, you can get on your dragon riding mount, and it's just on the ground, a regular ground speed mount. And if you go and you jump off something, you glide. And it's got a little bit of physics to it. So, you know, nose down, you're gliding down, you gain speed, going up, you lose speed. And if you end up reaching zero speed, you kind of just slow fall to the ground and you're done. And so it's really good if you're starting from somewhere high up and you can just glide forever. Like, you can just go, and you can get going really fast too. So like, we don't have add-ons on the alpha, so can't say for sure, but I suspect that it's going faster than like max flying speed on a flying mount when you really get going. Sustaining that really high speed for a long time is maybe not practical, but this is like when you're going from the top of the Azure span to the bottom of the Azure span, you can really get moving.
Gotcha.
Which then brings me to my second, like, kind of complaint, kind of like, not sure. Getting back up.
Oh yeah. Like, once you fall to the bottom,
at the bottom, you can't really, like, you can't fly back up even at like regular flying speed or whatever. You end up spending a lot of time on the ground. So the way the Dragonflight dragon writing actually kind of works in practice is you've got three crystals. They call them vigor. I call them crystals. And they recharge when you're in one of two states. You're either on the ground walking around, they'll recharge there, or they will recharge while you're going fast. So if you get your speed up, you can like use those crystals to like maintain your speed or go even faster.
Gotcha.
When you're at the bottom, you really can't get up to speed in order to regain them while flying, which puts you in a situation where basically like to get back up. Cause like I was questing at the very top end of the Azure Span. Yep. And I rode all the way down to the bottom corner. And I actually went like was in the water and ran into an issue where I didn't have any vigor and they were all like sheer cliffs. So I had to just like paddle around for a bit and wait for one of the crystals to recharge. Nice. So I could get back up. It ended up being a lot like a ground mount where I would like be on the ground mount for a bit, reach like a big cliff face or whatever, and then use my vigor to get up above it and then continue. And gotcha. So that part felt way less good than flying, but also with us having in theory, like a very limited amount of dragon riding experience at that point.
Right.
It maybe is something that will get smoothed over through progression. But even then, it wasn't that bad because it was still better than being on a ground mount, which is what we would normally be on in like the beginning of an expansion. Because on a regular ground mount, if I hit one of those cliffs, I have to go around it. I have to find a way around it. Here, I was able to just like mash two, go up in the air and like go over it.
Yeah. I think I think a lot of people had like similar feedback to you is that like right now it just seems like you have limited abilities, but I think Azure Song is supposed to be like a mid-ish zone in terms of like where it is in the progression.
As I mentioned, the NPC that you talk to that teleports you to Azure Span also sets your level to 65, which is what I always assume is like their expectation on what your level will be when you get there.
Right.
So it is right about halfway through the expansion. Maybe it's like the third zone in the leveling path. And then you do the, you know, I don't know what would be the fourth zone. I assume it's the zone with the raid in it, to be honest.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, but I think, I mean, it's cool that it's enjoyable, right? Like, I think that was the one thing, like, when we saw, I think, a lot of the videos, and to be fair, this is still just me hearing from you and other people talking about it, but my concern was always it would feel, like, stiff. Like, it would just feel like flying, but with like a power gauge that eventually it ran out and then like you weren't flying anymore. But it sounds like it's the ability. I think it's like the combination of like the speed and the abilities, like the like a slight little mini game of like how far can I push myself of like getting enough speed but still being able to go forward and like not losing a lot and recharging my vigor and stuff like that. So I'm to be fair, like I'm excited to like literally log into the game and just fly around, like find someone really high and see how far I can go.
Yeah.
Right. Or I think
I'll tell you, you can go really far. So there's one of the places you remember in Wrath of the Lich King, the like blue dragon area where they have like the big floating rings.
Yep. Yeah. The Malagos raid is there, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's some of that in Azure Span, and you get teleported to the top of it, and you actually have the ability to go back and teleport up there again and again. So you can go up there, and you can like it's super high up, and you can jump off there and do dragon riding from there.
Oh, that's so cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I think too, they mentioned in one of the interviews that they've upped the draw distance too.
Yeah.
So you can like now with dragon riding, they have like a reason to maybe implement some, like extend some of the client tech there because like you can see, so you can go so far, right? And you're actually probably moving so fast that being able to see further is something they need to do, which is cool. No, that's awesome. There might be a slight part of me that's more excited about dragon riding than about like the talents. I mean,
dragon riding is, I think, one of the most fun things they've added as like an expansion system.
Awesome.
Probably since like Legion Artifacts. And it doesn't have the Azerite power or the artifact power problem. Right. So I suspect that at the end of the day, it'll be remembered a lot more fondly.
That's awesome.
The Legion Artifacts, and people still like Legion Artifacts. They just complain about AP.
That's exciting that that it's that cool, that they seem to at least initially hit it, which is awesome. And then we'll see how like the upgrades go, like what maybe new powers you get, and then like the fact that you can customize your dragon riding thing,
which is actually, so one of the things, there's a lot of quests that part of the reward is a customization for your dragon. Okay. These are all items, you have to take them somewhere and like right click them to, you know, learn them. You can't actually go to the place, as far as I've been able to tell, you can't go to the place yet to actually learn them, so they're all just sitting in my bag.
Nice.
But you can see, like, you know, stub snout and like, I don't remember, like there's a bunch of like, you know, hook tail and things like this of like changing the appearance of your dragon. And they also started you out, so it looks like every zone has a different dragon that you can get.
Okay.
Like that, like a different dragon? Base model.
Oh, okay.
And they look very substantially different. There's one that looks more like a pterodactyl than anything else.
Nice.
And then there's one that looks more like a wyvern with like some very, very updated art.
Okay, nice.
And then just some like more standard, like this is a dragon, like a black dragon kind of thing. If you have the black dragon mount from Wrath of the Lich King, it looks a lot like that with more polygons.
Gotcha. Oh, that's awesome. Man, I'm jealous. That's super you cool though. Be. Yeah, no, I've got like mad FOMO right now.
So there's one thing I want to mention. I don't think we want to spend a lot of time on it because we got tons of other stuff to talk about. There's also a little mini game you can do with dragon riding, which is dragon racing. And it is just, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but it's really just flying through rings. And just completing it, like I actually failed the first time that I tried it, like while I was learning how to do the dragon riding stuff. Just didn't make it all the way back to the start. And that's the only thing that's required for bronze, is that you get back to the start.
Yeah.
But then as you get better at it, you can start doing it and going for speed. And it actually took a good bit for me to learn how to like manage my resources effectively enough to actually get through it on gold. Like it was actually quite a bit of fun as a mini game. So yeah. That's going to be, I think, a really neat feature of it. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get some like dragon riding world quests, where the world quest is just, hey, go complete this dragon race.
Yeah, that would be cool. And there's multiple of these dragon, well, at least in the zone you have, there's like more than just one dragon
race, right? I did three. I saw a couple of others. I think there's five or six total in that zone. There's a section of achievements for those races.
That's fun. Yeah. Gosh, now I'm actually probably, I think we talked about this before we started, but I'm really excited about that stuff, because I think that's like a cool like speed racy, like just trying to like perfect something, which is like part of a
game. It's very different. So. Like it's not something that you really get a lot of in WoW right now. So it's a very different thing that's kind of new and fresh. And it maybe doesn't hold up compared to like a dedicated racing game or something, but it's just like a thing to do in WoW that then you also take that practice that you did to succeed at the dragon race. And now it also, that practice is going to let you like go faster, farther, better with your dragon riding, is very cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, I'm excited about that. And it sounds like, you've had a very similar experience to like basically what everyone else has said, which is dragon riding is just a lot of fun to like interact with.
I'm very happy with it.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I don't know. I guess we'll sort of move forward a little bit. So like we talked a little bit about like alpha's out. So we're probably going to spend a lot of the time here just sort of walking through different things that have come out of interviews. And I guess Emelson, you can sort of impart your experiences with what you've played so far, but
yeah.
As a part of this, and this is sort of a fun little fact, is that they, of course, WoWhead and all the different sites have started their data mining. So, you know, there's things that may not be in the game currently that they're starting to sort of data mine out. One of those things was a bunch of Brewmaster talents. I will say that, like, the funny thing is there was a weird screenshot floating around right before Alpha came out of actually some 10.0 skills on WoWhead, like the live site. which I thought was pretty funny, but now they've got their own Dragonflight section. You can see some of this stuff, but some of the, I guess it's Brewmaster specific stuff have come out. And I don't know if you have a chance to look at any of these yet.
Yeah.
But it seems like these are potentially talents, like Brewmaster specific talents that'll be on your tree.
Right. So the reason these are on here, it looks like one new one, And the others are all returning things. And the reason they're showing up here is that they have gotten some kind of update in the changes for 10.0. So we'll go through these really quickly. I do think it's funny that they called the article New Monk Talents or Monk Talent Tree Speculation, but it's all Brewmaster stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm assuming this is like their landing page article. So like as they data mine Mistweaver or Windwalker stuff, this will get expanded. Because I did that for some of the other classes, but we'll see. I actually bookmarked this page just in case.
Right now, at least, it's all Brewmaster stuff. So the things we got on here, the new ones right at the top, Counter-Strike. Each time you dodge or an enemy misses you, your next Tiger Palm or Spinning Crane Kick deals 100% increased damage. Pretty neat. Okay. And that has potential interactions with Blackout Combo, which we assume is going to show up on the Monk Tree again somewhere. It's a very popular talent. Would be very disappointed if it doesn't. So maybe there's a real like Blackout Combo build somewhere hiding in the wings with Counter-Strike, which interacts positively with our mastery, which is very cool. And the rest are all actually returning stuff. And there's a lot of stuff from Legion. So there's Dragonfire Brew, which was an artifact trait. This is one of the gold traits that just when you push Breath of Fire, you do it two more times. So it also increases the duration of Breath of Fire, so you get 100% uptime on it. So, yeah. Not a very powerful one, but we'll see. We'll see. I'll reserve judgment.
Well, maybe a nice addition to like building around Breath of Fire, like the debuff itself. So
yeah. We also have Guy Plins, the return of Guy Plins. This is a very neat Legion legendary, which really was hamstrung more by just the general power of Brewmaster, so you usually didn't need it. But what it is when you purify with Purifying Brew, you are healed for 25% of the damage that you removed. This is very good. This is a nice little thing where, like, if you look at the amount of damage that you purify right now over the course of a fight, you probably remove half, like 40 to 50% of the damage that you take if you're doing it correctly. Of the damage that you stagger, I should say. Damage that you stagger. And so this is going to be like, if you think about that, you know, 10, 12% of the damage that you stagger just getting removed effectively because you're healing yourself with Guy Plins is pretty good.
And does, well, but the heal triggers, so you could overheal yourself, right? Like if you're topped with red stagger and you purify it,
Yes, it gets overhealed. Gotcha. But the quote unquote correct way to purify in a lot of cases is to do it right after you get hit.
So you're already low anyway.
If you just get hit and you purify immediately and you regain some of that health, it shouldn't be very much overhealing. But of course, that is not necessarily the way it's going to play out in Shadowlands or in Dragonflight. Like we actually saw in Shadowlands that one of the things, there was a significant difference in how Brewmaster played despite not a like huge number of changes, just due to raid tuning and raid design, and like a nerf to stagger percent. Like those three things dramatically changed how the spec feels. So
gotcha.
We also have the return of Salacella Beams. This is another Legion legendary. When you keg smash, the remaining cooldown on Breath of Fire is reset. We use this with the Blackout combo rotation in Legion so that we didn't have any dead GCDs. You would just do your like 8 GCD long loop or whatever it was and just repeat it ad infinitum.
Gotcha.
Then we also have Scalding Brew. This is a current conduit. Keg Smash deals additional damage to targets affected by Breath of Fire. Very basic passive gain. This is actually one of those things where actually maybe the increased duration from Dragonfire Brew is good for this, because right now it's kind of awkward with Breath of Fire not lasting the full duration, so you can't have 100% uptime without using Charred Passions.
Right.
And what that means is that you have some cases where like you have Breath of Fire and Keg Smash coming up and you want to push both, but you should push Breath of Fire first in some cases in order to get the damage amp on Keg Smash. Speaking of Keg Smash, the shoulders, Storm Sout's last keg, very popular legendary, the one we currently use right now, probably coming back as a talent. This all but confirms that it comes back as a talent.
Right.
And a couple of quick ones. We've got an Azerite trait, training of Nia's out. You gain mastery based on your stagger level. The numbers here are obviously like not right, because 15 mastery is nothing. But, you know, this is going to give some reasonable amount of mastery probably. So you just like when you're taking a ton of damage, you have a greater chance to dodge. And then hit scheme. This one is interesting. So this is currently a Torghast power. Dealing damage with Blackout Kick increases the damage of your next Keg Smash by 25%, stacking up to 4 times. I don't know what to think about this. Obviously, I've used it a little bit in Torghast out of necessity. Like, sometimes you just take the powers you get, not the powers you want. And in there, it's completely overshadowed by Corrosive Dosage and the Touch of Death powers. So
the best one,
It's not the greatest in there. But out in the real world, it's very, there's potential here. Like, you think about a situation like Denathrius. Like, imagine you're doing Denathrius. It's in phase one. You know there's a set of ad spawns coming up. You're using the shoulders. You stack up your hit scheme so that you get a double damage Keg Smash when the ads spawn.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Like, on average, it means that your Keg Smash hits about 25 to 30% harder because you get slightly more than one Blackout Kick per Keg Smash. Really, it's close to two, but it's not quite two. It's very awkward. So this is going to be just a nice damage boost to Keg Smash in a lot of scenarios. But then in scenarios where you know there's an ad wave coming up, there's some interesting things you can do. Or a damage jam coming up, like a Sludge Fist thing. You build up Keg Smash and you put the plus 100% damage in the 100% damage amp and you go nuts and probably rip up and die.
it seems like maybe some change in terms of like, you holding Keg Smash just for more damage at a good point. So, but yeah, I think that's in terms of monk stuff. I mean, I know you can make a monk on alpha today, but
they have the current talents.
And you have 43 talent points to use in those set of talent points. I don't know if you saw that in the tree, but
I didn't see that.
I think somebody's posted a screenshot of the tree, but it's the old tree. But then at the top it says you have 43 unspent talent points. We're like, well, can't spend them all in that tree.
Does it still only let you use one talent point per row? I haven't actually tried that. It would be kind of funny to just walk around on alpha with like just all of the talents and the old tree selected.
Yeah. I think that you can only do one per row still. And I think it's the capstone row. Is it you need to be a level 110 or something? Like, I don't know if that's with monks, but with I saw another class talent tree, similar idea, but it was like the capstone was like 110 to get it. So yeah, it was no new monk stuff other than these potential talent tree stuff for Brewmaster. So I mean, it seems like, I guess just sort of a one quick comment. It seems like it's a lot of just old stuff that they're just going to plop into the tree, right? So like, I guess the expectation, if you're not, I mean, even if you're Brewmaster, we don't have your full tree yet, but like for monks in general, we're probably going to see a lot of Legion legendaries, potentially some gold artifact, you know, traits, probably a couple Azerite powers, maybe a BFA legendary, and then definitely probably some of the legendary stuff from this expansion. So
I mean, that seems about par for the course given what we've seen from the DK and bear or druid talent trees. So there's a lot of very popular stuff from the olden days of monk
that chi.
No chi. As far as we can tell, there's no references to it in the new stuff. There's no, like, if you log on to a monk right now and you switch to Brewmaster spec, you're not going to have any chi, which is, I'm slightly disappointed, but you know.
I think it'd be cool if they maybe gave us like, maybe not chi, but like taking some of the empower tech from Invoker and allowing us to empower abilities might be interesting, which sort of does sort of do the thing, kind of the thing chi did, which was like, you have to invest a bunch of stuff into something and then use it. So in this case, instead of investing a resource, it's like you invest time.
I mean, but the Evokers actually stole an ability from Brewmaster.
They stole an ability from Mistweaver and renamed it. Couple, actually.
they've got Fire Breath, We've got Breath of Fire. I'm just like, I'm wondering who we sue for copyright infringement.
Well, I mean, the Perseverance, I guess we need to talk about Invoker as the new class, because they sort of are out now and you can kind of play around with them. But yeah, they have Rescue, which is basically Mistwalk the talent, which basically you fly from where you are to an ally and heal them.
Yeah.
So they did. Invokers are playable, I guess, of the classes, right? The classes that have talent tree revamps, you'll see those new talent tree revamps, and then invokers are also playable. I think you mentioned you can't do their starting experience, but you can log in.
Yeah.
Play with them at level 65.
And that's actually what I did my questing on, is an invoker.
Gotcha. How, I guess, and maybe we can talk about this, because like I have know nothing about the DPS side of Invoker. I spent all my time.
I know nothing about the healing side. So
cool, perfect. So I guess how do they play from like a DPS perspective?
Weirdly. And some of it I think is a numbers issue right now, actually, where like, you know, they always are going to want feedback around how the gameplay experience is, but the gameplay experience is so much dependent on what the numbers are.
Yeah.
Where like right now, a lot of the like finishing stuff, the stuff that costs, you have mana and you have essence, and essence is kind of like your limiter for what in theory are your bigger, more powerful spells, mm-hmm. but those just don't really hold up right now in the numbers. So it's kind of just better to put all of your talents in the things that buff the damage of Living Flame, and it just casts Living Flame a bunch, like you're playing a TBC Warlock. And then you only use your essence spenders, because they don't cost mana. You only use your essence spenders enough to not run from casting Living Flame.
That's funny.
And that's been kind of like, that's how it feels when you're questing. It's like, I should just really be casting Living Flame right now.
Gotcha.
And then there's the empower abilities, and these ones honestly feel kind of clunky, but I think that's a UI like implementation issue more than an actual fundamental flaw.
Okay.
So the default mode that they put you on for casting these is hold and release. So you push the button down, you hold it, and you release it to cast. Okay. And it just like takes like half a second for the UI for the hold and release thing to even show up. So
gotcha.
Like I'm trying to cast one of my empower abilities, and so there's two of them. There's Fire Breath, which is just like a cone in front of you, does some initial damage, puts a dot on things. The more you empower it, the longer you hold it down, the longer the dot lasts. The other one, there's one, so that's the red one, and there's a blue one for the DPS side. And the blue one, I don't remember what it's called, but it just is a direct damage spell, basically. And the longer you hold it down, the more targets it hits. So for that one, really, when you're fighting a single mob, you really just want to get it to one empowerment level and then stop. Except for there's some talents that like ask you to empower things a bunch, because they make your essence regen better, or they give you reduced cooldown on your major cooldown. All of which kind of falls apart because the essence spenders don't really feel powerful.
Gotcha. They don't actually feel like the end ability, right? Like the,
yeah.
Like the finisher, you said. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that's an issue right now. But like trying to actually do that on the first level, it just takes so long for that to show up. That, like, it's really difficult to do. I actually found to feel less clunky, feel better, is there's a second empower mode you can do called... I don't actually know what the term in the UI is, but it's double press. You press it once to start, you press it again to cast.
Gotcha.
And that one felt a lot better than trying to hold it, because it was just like, you know, I press it, I wait for it to be at the spot I want, and then I press it again. The empower spells are also kind of wonky in that they've got two GCDs. One when you start the cast and one when you complete the cast.
Interesting. So you're locked into at least 3 seconds then, minus haste.
I think the first second is like, or the first one is like half a GCD, and it mostly exists to like maybe keep you from accidentally canceling it.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. But the second one was really awkward, because you think about like a channeled spell, like if I'm channeling Arcane Missiles or if I'm channeling Essence Font and I finish doing that, then I go straight into the next thing. But the GCD at the end of the Empower spells means that you can't.
Gotcha. I wonder, I wonder if they're doing that too because of like server tick stuff. Like maybe they're trying to like hedge their bets. Cause like nowadays you have like the Mistweaver, we call it a bug, but it's just the way the game works, in that like if you have Thunder Focus T up and you cast, you have like a cast ability like Vivify. And then right as the cast hits, you also like Rising Sun Kick, you get the TFT buff to both spells.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's why they do the GCD at the end, because they don't want you to like, I don't know if there's anything either of these classes have that buff that, but maybe that's one way to get around it.
There's not anything that I remember, but there is. So there's another thing as well, which is if you end your Empower spell by casting a different spell, you get nothing. It doesn't like cast it at your current empowerment level. It just does nothing.
Gotcha.
Which is another reason I think maybe there's the GCD there, is because they really want you to like commit to casting this. And then at the end, you finish the cast, you have that GCD to actually push your next button instead of canceling it early. But it just feels really clunky. And like, I understand that maybe they don't want the like raid mode of these abilities to be that you go in the double press mode and you press it once to start and you press a different spell to actually cast it. But it feels really clunky right now. The Empower spells do. The single target one does actually hit like a truck, though. That one.
That's good.
That one hurts. And so there's this weird thing where it kind of feels like maybe the rotation doesn't work, in part due to numbers and in part due to the fact that like I'm leveling.
Right, yeah.
Because there's a bunch of CDR stuff baked in where using essence abilities reduces the cooldown on your... Well, not baked in, use talents, but you can talent into it. Where using essence abilities reduces the cooldown on your empower abilities, using your empower abilities increases your essence regeneration, and then also using your empowerment abilities reduces the cooldown of your major like DPS CD, which also is like kind of like weird and not great right now. Okay. In part because of the whole like essence spenders not being very good problem.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I will say that. And I guess the other thing too is there, I guess on the healing side of things, like not having played this right, but just sort of read and sort of seen some other people playing it, they have at least some interesting abilities, right? Like they have, it seems like Blizzard built out a new class with new ideas, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
Even though they did steal Mistwalk from Mistweaver as well, sort of do whatever. But no, I mean, on the healing side, they have some interesting like CDR type abilities. So they have like a blessing that'll reduce movement CDR. So like for your party members, or maybe it's your whole raid, I forget the scope of it, but which is an interesting idea in terms of just like, hey, if you want to move more, you can do that. And then, yeah, they gave them a quote unquote raid wide stagger, but it's just it's a time reversal. So basically like, their raid CD is essentially any damage you've taken in the last 5 seconds is reduced or is like rewound, and you only take 50% of that damage. Basically, it reduces like 50% of the damage taken over the past 5 seconds, not the next 5 seconds.
Right. So it's kind of like not the good part of stagger, which is that stagger keeps you from dying in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the second part of it, which is like, I mean, there's probably going to be some use for it, but no, I mean, they seem interesting in terms of like a healer, right? Lots of movement too. They have like I said, they have that flight thing. They have the ability to pick up an ally too and then move with them, so almost like a targeted leap of faith.
Spell is super weird. Yeah, so that spell, it's the only spell I know of where you actually have to pick one target and then pick a different target.
Yeah,
like you can't cast it like normally when you cast a spell, you like pick a target for the spell and then stuff happens,
right?
This one, you like you pick a target for the spell and then you pick a location on the ground.
Yeah, which is cool, I think. Like an interesting way of like moving people, maybe helping like your like slower raid members move around, right? Or like to get a two-man team somewhere where like they don't just have the movement that maybe like a rogue might have with Shadow Step, or like a hunter with Disengage, right?
This is something that I feel like it's going to be a lot more useful, or not useful, a lot more pleasant to use in a PvP setting where you can like make a macro for each of your group members. It'd be like, okay, arena frame two, we're picking up arena frame two, and I just click the location on the ground and I don't have to mouse over the frame. Like a 20 player raid setting, if somebody goes, you know, hey, I need a rescue, having to do the 1-2 versus just like a priest mouse overing with Leap of Faith is kind of rough.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, so we'll see how much it actually gets used, but I can see it more as a planned movement versus an oh crap, I'm about to die type movement type thing.
Yeah. There's also, so their movement ability, and this is the whole class movement ability, is hover. Like, this is their personal movement ability. It's on a 30-second cooldown. You can talent into a second charge of it, and you can talent into extended duration. Baseline, it's 6 seconds. You move faster. You have levitation, and you can cast while moving.
Which is huge as the healer, yeah.
Yeah, it's huge as the DPS spec as well, because there's not a lot of instant casts in their kit.
Oh, nice, nice.
So it's very important that you have this ability to do the cast while moving. It does, like, there's a couple of spells that they have that really feel like they need somebody from the mage, like, spec or the mage class to look at them and go, you can cast this while moving.
Yeah.
Or you can cast this while casting, rather. You can cast this while casting. Hover feels like you should be able to, like, talent into a thing that lets you cast it while casting. Because right now it's this weird thing where, like, you have to stop casting, push hover, and then, like, your final spell, you have to be careful to stop before hover ends so that you can finish the cast of whatever spell you're currently casting. It's just a little awkward. And then there's one. Go ahead.
No, that's right. I mean, it's very much like those similar issues are the same reasons like shamans with Spirit Walker Grace. Like, they have the same problem with that, which is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a nice, I mean, as a healer, particularly, I mean, DPS, I guess I didn't realize most of their abilities weren't instant cast, but definitely as a healer, like, the ability to, like, cast and move, particularly on such a short cooldown, is huge. Even if you might not use it, like, within a fight, but, like, particularly in, like, if you think a Mythic Plus setting, as you move from pack to pack, like, being able to not slow down is big. Yeah.
I think there's, like, really two, I guess there's three instant cast spells in the Evoker kit. Two of them are Essence Spenders. One of them has a cooldown. One of them is effectively AoE only because it's really bad in single target right now. And then the other one is, like, a filler spell that is clearly geared more towards AoE.
Gotcha.
So, and that's all you've got. Everything else has a cast time. The Empower spells are actually exempt from the hover, like, cast while moving thing. You cannot cast those while moving with hover. If you're hovering and you want to cast an empower spell, you have to stop and plant into your empower thing.
That's a good design point, right?
Yeah, I don't know how to cast. It's very awkward.
Yeah, but I think if you think about, like, the empowered abilities, it's like you have to, like, really probably think about it as a more like the class fantasy side of things versus the gameplay side.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense, but
the other thing that I feel like should be castable while casting is they've got this ability that makes your next empowered spell cast at its maximum power instantly.
Oh, okay.
And it's just really you're locked so heavily into cast time spells, like your whole rotation pretty much on single target seems like it's going to be either casting or channeling or empowering. That's all you do. It's really awkward to be like, I'm going to take this half second to a second in between GCDs. Like I have to stop casting, push this button, then I push my empower spell. And it just feels awkward and bad. And because it's off GCD, you can't really, like, spell cue it either. It's very...
The ability to empower your empowerments is off GCD?
Yeah.
I will say that it's... Being a monk, being at least Mistweaver and using Thunder Focus T, that doesn't seem terrible.
With a monk, you have multiple spells that are, like, instant cast. Like, true, you spend a lot of time, like, casting, you know, Vivify or Essence Font, but you also have all of your DPS buttons are instant casts. Yeah. And you have Soothing Mist that's instant cast. And so you can cast Essence Font during any of those spells. Or not Essence Font. Thunder Focus T during any of those spells. And just because it's off GCD, but you can't cast normal off GCD spells while a GCD is inactive, but you're casting something else.
Okay, so you couldn't use the ability while you were casting to, like, queue up for the next time you're going to use it?
Right.
Gotcha.
So, like, if I'm casting Living Flame, which has a longer than GCD cast time, Yep. You know, I'm casting Living Flame. I cannot use this ability that's going to make my next Empower spell better. I have to wait for the cast to end. Then I push it. Then I cast my Empower spell. And if you start your Empower spell by accident, like you're trying to push like both really quickly and you just like miss the instant casting and you start casting your Empower spell, you have to like cancel it.
Then you hit the GCDs.
Yeah.
That sounds rough. I mean,
it's fairly clunky, and I think it would just be a lot smoother to play if they just made it castable while casting.
Gotcha. The only other question I think I had on the DPS side there, and there was a couple other invokers for things I wanted to bring up, was like, how does the range feel? Because range has been sort of like a huge topic, at least on the healer side of things, where it's they're a mid-range class. So like basically most of their spells are about 25 yards in range, which is, it's not like typically healing spells at least are 40 yard ranges. So it's a little more than half duration, which sort of puts you in a weird position in the raid where do you want to be with melee? Do you want to be with ranged? And like how does that work? So I don't know if you did any group content or how it felt at least leveling, but
I haven't done any group content because I boosted or like I went to Azure Spam with my Evoker and then realized I wasn't able to queue for Shadowlands dungeons anymore.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anybody that I saw that was spamming for like a mythic group to go back and do Shadowlands dungeons with things. And I'm the only one in my guild that I know of that got alpha, so I don't have people.
Gotcha.
But it is hard to say just doing questing content because like a lot of times you just naturally end up in that like 25 yard range anyway. Or if you're not, you're mounted and you're going into it and you just have to get a little bit closer than you might if you were playing, you know, a warlock or a mage. So really difficult to say. Definitely could see it being a problem though.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see like how that range thing sort of plays out across both classes, right? Because I know healer wise, like if I'm mostly playing PvE, the 25 yard range, I'll tell you, was slightly annoying learning the original version of Monk in Legion because Essence Bond had a 25 yard range at that point. So it was like, it was this awkward, like not like getting used to that in terms of like who is in range, who I can hit, things like that. And then, we'll see. I think in PvP it becomes a larger issue because like being in melee as a healer is like very dangerous. So we'll see what they come up with that piece. Cool. I guess, and just a couple other things I want to touch on, at least on the healer side, and I don't know if you had anything else. There's actually some other cool abilities that they've added. So the actual tank cooldown for Perseverance Invoker is what they're calling time dilation, which basically makes 50% of the damage taken over the, or 50% of the damage taken for the next 8 seconds will be dealt over the next 8 seconds. Like the idea, this is literally stagger, like castable stagger, which is like interesting. It doesn't lower the healing requirement, right? You still have to heal all that damage from a tank, like from a healing perspective on that tank. It just spreads it out. So it lessens like the chance of a burst. I think it ends up being like, I saw a couple of things saying it might not be that good. I think this ends up probably being one of the better tank cooldowns.
This is something that is going to be like really, really good in raid. I think like you use it before, like you think of Raglan, your tank's going to soak gravitational collapse. You put this on them. They take, you know, they only take 30% of the damage up front and you just heal through the rest of it. I am less high on it in Mythic Plus, where if you think about using a external on the tank, you're basically trading throughput now for throughput in 8 seconds.
Right.
And it's kind of like, it's got the same thing as Stagger does in Mythic Plus, where there's not ebbs and flows as much in the damage intake on the tank. So you end up with just like higher damage intake in a few seconds, and then you have a new problem.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, I would agree too. I think the only, I guess in Mythic Plus, the only nice thing is it, if the tank is taking a lot of damage plus the group, you can essentially smooth, again, I guess it's the same thing in raid, it's like smoothing that spikiness out. It doesn't get rid of it, but I agree. It's probably be much better in raids than it'll be in Mythic Plus in terms of the individual cooldown. And then the other thing is I think it's called what was the name of it? It's almost like you get to store spells and then you get to spit them out after you cast them. Sorry, one second.
Was that Echo?
It's called Stasis.
Okay.
Actually, so Stasis is essentially where you use it and then the next three helpful spells you use are stored and then duplicated. So it's almost like a buildable convoke, right? So like the idea is like you can hit Stasis and then use three helpful abilities and then hit Stasis again. And those same three abilities are cast in that exact same order and in their instant cast at that point, which is another, again,
can you put your raid cooldown in that? Like, can you put time dilation in that?
No, you can't put the raid cooldown in that for sure. They've actually called that out specifically in the note.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting for like, I'm trying to think of like where that might be useful, particularly maybe with like large AoE events and you could store like things like that. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a cool new thought ability, right? That that comes out. So and yeah, so that'll be fun. And then I don't think there's anything else coming out, but Stasis is probably the coolest one. And then yeah, Echo, I think you mentioned Echo, but Echo basically will like replicate your next single target ability too. Okay. On a target. Yeah. So yeah. But yeah, no, I think Invoker, it seems interesting and fun. I think a lot of people saw like the original stuff coming out and was like, oh, they stole Stagger from monks, they stole, you know, Monk Mistwalk and all that type of stuff. But I think it ends up, I mean, for the more I've seen people play it, it seems like it plays a lot differently. And to be fair, like, I'm not that excited. Like, I'll play one because it's new, but like, I don't think it's not enough for me to be like, oh, this might be my new main. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
it seems too slow, actually.
I'm definitely not a Devastation main. I will say that. at least as things currently stand, definitely not a Devastation main. I suspect there will be people who like it, but it's really difficult to say who those people are going to be until it gets a little bit more tuning on the actual like DPS abilities.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the thing, I think, is that it's still super new. I think we have to see how this class ends up playing. It's got some cool ideas in like terms of like new abilities and like just at least this healer side seems like it's different than other healers, right? Like they still have their like similar types of abilities, but some of the flavor around the edges, particularly with some of their like CDR stuff, is cool. And the fact that they brought in a CDR cooldown makes me hopeful that like maybe CDR becomes a more interesting part of the game. So but yeah, we'll see how that goes. So
I feel like CDR is one of those things that they're going to experiment with and we're going to break things horribly and then they're going to pull back on it. We're going to do something like, it's going to be like, you know, you're going to combine Symbol of Hope and the CDR from Rogues and the CDR from this. And then things are going to just like break into and they're going to be like, okay, back it up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I would agree with you on that. There will come a point in time where there will be some level of combinations of CDR that, you know, that sort of fit and will break the game for sure. So so cool. So I think I don't know where you want to go particularly next. So I compiled a list of different topics we could talk about in terms of everything that's come out. I guess we could talk maybe a little bit about
some of these like raid related ones, like the we have confirmation that we are getting not Master Loot, despite Wowhead's banner image, but Group Loot, at least, is coming back in Dragonflight for raid content. Yeah. So Ian said basically that they hadn't really heard people asking for dungeons to have group loot or master loot back. It's only really a rating thing. Yeah. But effectively what this means is that stuff that drops from group loot is tradable. Just like it doesn't have the eye level restrictions. Mm-hmm. So when it drops, it goes into something like we have right now with RC Loot Council, and then we can award it. And the catch being that it's still got the need greed stuff. So, yeah. But at the same time, like personal loot will also be sticking around for raids as an option. Right. So there will be, you know, if you're happy with personal loot in your guild, you can just continue using personal loot. And having tried using master loot in a casual guild way back, it's really not worth it. Just use personal loot. Just use personal loot. Like in the guild I'm in now, we would use master loot and it would be good because we effectively master loot the personal loot items that can be traded. But if you're not at that level, you're going to probably want to stick to personal loot.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a very... Because I played in this guild when there was master loot and, you know, played in guilds, did master loot, and then, like, nowadays with personal loot. And it's just, from my perspective, like, this is a really good chance. I think this is great to have back because it definitely feels terrible, like, in my position. Particularly, I think this coming back along with tier sets, because they sort of... confirmed tier sets will be in this first raid, is that it felt very bad for me getting like my like normal tier gloves from my box and then going and killing heroic Lahuvum and getting tier gloves and just being like, well, like I'm like, this sucks because like I don't the eye level is great, but like this completes somebody's four piece if I don't like if this doesn't happen. It even happens too with like not outside of tier, right? Like just typical gear where I'm like, I'm never going to use this belt, but it happens to be four item level greater than what I currently have equipped and I cannot trade this. So like, this is awful. So this is awesome. I think the other thing that this brings back, which is one of my favorite things in the entire world, is loot's going to drop that no one in the raid can use. So I'm really excited to get like, well, we'll always have a hunter in my group, but if you didn't have a hunter in your group and watching bows drop is great. Brings me back to like,
or rogue daggers.
Rogue daggers, our thing when my original classic in Burning Crusade Guild, we got so much warlock loot that it was a joke where like I literally fully geared out two warlocks just because it dropped so much. Like I'm excited for like warlock tier to drop and no one be able to use it. So
tier tokens,
It won't happen anymore with tokens, but
yeah. So they did also the Evoker class is joining the monks on the Zenith token. So
yes.
Right now we have 12 classes, right? So every token has three. There's four tokens. Zenith is gonna, right?
There's more than 12 classes.
Isn't it 13 next expansion? Or am I misremembering?
No, it's 14.
14 next. Okay.
14 next. It's 13 now. 14 next expansion. Okay. So there's two tokens with four, three tokens with three.
Are you sure?
Two tokens with four and two tokens with three. Yes. Zenith is Invoker, Monk, Rogue Warrior. Dreadful is DK. Oh, no, you're wrong. Wait, I'm wrong. It's 3-3-3 and 1-4. Because
it's 36 specs right now.
Yeah.
Three specs per class on average. That's 12.
I read Death Knight as two classes. Okay, so yeah, it's 3 with 3, and then we're the only one with 4.
Yeah, we'll be getting a fourth one. Yeah. That's actually kind of funny because it makes... So currently the Zenith token is two leather wearers and a plate wearer. This is going to be leather, plate, and mail. It's tons of fun.
Yeah, but to be fair, it'll hopefully be like... It's right now it's Rogue Warrior, Monk, and Invoker. Like,
yeah.
Not the most popular set of classes, we'll say.
Yes.
So it's not like there'll be a ton of competition. It's not like mages and hunters or, you know, even hunter and warlock and stuff like that. So
yeah. But that is, I mean, even if we don't get full master loot, I'm still going to be happy that we got need greed and like the removal of trading restrictions from that. Because that's going to address the situation, like you mentioned, with tier slots, with trinkets. You know, it sucked getting like a heroic first sigil and being like, I'm never going to use this, but I can't give it to our mage.
Yeah.
Like that's big feels bad.
It's just, yeah. So, I mean, and the same thing too, when you think about like even weapon drops, right? Like as a person who like would pick up a one-handed spell blade or whatever, you know, spell sword, right? And not be able to trade it, even though I had a staff of like, that was generally better. I didn't have an offhand and I could trade this to somebody who had an offhand available. Yeah, it's generally group loot, I think, is overall, at least in raids, is fine. I'm fine with it being personal loot in dungeons because, to be fair, I would say that
you don't want need greed in dungeons.
No, I don't want to deal with the politics of like, even if it's four other guildmates, like I don't want to deal with that. Like, I just want to like get my loot. If I can trade it, great. If I can't trade it, whatever. And like go from there. You know what I mean?
It's also way less of an issue at the lower eye level for Mythic Plus. Like,
yeah.
You can trade pretty much anything from Mythic Plus very quickly into a tier.
Yeah.
It's raids where that's really an issue. Because with the Mythic Plus stuff, it drops to the lower eye level. You spend Valor on it to upgrade it to the, you know, current eye level.
Yeah.
And so because it starts at the lower eye level, it starts as being tradable. And therefore, you can trade it.
Yeah.
Like, the group size of only five, you're way more likely to get loot that is literally unusable if you use need greed there.
Exactly. Particularly with the way dungeon loot tables are, right? Like, there's generally going to be something for every, like, spec or class in a dungeon, in each dungeon. Yeah. So, like, getting, it doesn't make sense. So no, this is sort of, I think, some of the bigger news, like group loot's back, which is great. I think those will be definitely helpful in raids. I think they said they have the option. So you can stick with personal loot if you want, or go group loot if that's where your team wants to go. The other thing is the actual dungeon journal's live. So speaking of the raid, we do know that the first raid will be, at least right now, an 8-boss raid, which is a little bit less than our typical. I think what the last two have been between 10 and 13 bosses, the last couple.
Yeah, so the last Eternal Palace was 9, BOD was 10 or 9.
Yeah,
And then Ulyar was, I think, 8.
That's true. So back to like the older level, because Nathria was
10. Nathria is 10, Sanctum is 10, and Sepulchre is 11.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, so I mean, it's a 8-boss raid, which is good. I think it's a good number, a good intro number. It's not too crazy. And then they also, I guess this came out too, which I think is funny, which was in the Tally interview. Tally interviewed Ian, and basically Ian says, you know, essentially Ian, at least in the interview, has said they've thrown in the towel against Liquid and Echo. And basically have sort of stopped, quote unquote, the arms race. So Ian essentially admitted defeat, basically said, hey, you know, a little too grueling on this raid, that we went maybe a little too hard in building a raid for the, you know, the 50 or so people that get to partake in the race for world first, yes. Right?
This is great. This is great. This tier was really rough on a lot of guilds. Because of how long it was, like over a month longer than a typical tier for a lot of people. And then running up against season 4 as well, there's going to be a lot of guilds in 2 weeks. So they're going to be really frustrated that they didn't, like they got CE the previous 3 or 4 tiers and then they didn't get CE this one because of the tuning, because of the season 4 stuff. Like if this had been tuned like a regular tier, most of them would get it, but it wasn't.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think, I mean, I've had a couple of like just back and forth in Discord about this, but I think this ultimately ends up being a better change for the game, right? Like the idea, and it's better optically for the game, even if like some people are like, oh, we want to see really hard bosses get defeated and that's all I care about. But I think if you think about this more from the fact of like, look, the race for world first lasts a finite amount of time. Like,
yeah,
you know, like it lasts a week and you get to somebody wins, somebody loses. In this case, it lasted 3 weeks, but you know, it lasts a small amount of time in the course of an overall patch cycle. And If this patch right now will not be known for the fact that we had a 3 week race for world first, well, really just at the end of 2 week race for world first race, this patch is known for the fact that they've nerfed bosses every week for 6 months, basically.
Yeah.
And like, that's if they want to continue with the way that they release the pulse, or like, that'll be what every patch is known for. And to be fair, like players are not stupid. Like it just means that like, if you want to do Mythic, you wait 6 weeks and then you get your C right at the end. Right. Like, what I mean?
And that's people in guild were doing the math on that for the other team specifically, but like how like how late could they have started raiding? And if they, and just like still gotten CE when they did because of all the nerfs. And they were like, we could have waited a month.
Yeah.
I killed the jailer on the same day.
Yeah. I 100% agree. Like if you waited maybe a month, even I would say maybe even like 6 weeks, right? Like if you were a guild that had gotten CE before this tier, I'm almost positive you could have waited. Yeah. Yeah. A month makes sense. Which is like not how you want to play the game, right?
No.
I mean, I'm super stoked for at least Ian admitting, like generally like the way that Ian's interviews go that I've seen is like, if he acknowledges something happened, typically there will be a change based on that. Right. Or if he says like, you know, I'll never say never, it generally means that's never going to happen. So, right. I mean, in this case, no, this is, I think, a really good thing that they've at least acknowledged, and the fact that it sounds like, I mean, knowing Blizzard, I bet you this first raid will be like really easy and you'll blow through it in like another Xavius type expectation. But
at the same time, like Emerald Nightmare had one of the highest levels of just people playing it that any raid has had in recent memory. And some of that is because it was the first raid of Legion, right? Like Legion was very popular, but Legion also had a rocky start. Like if you ask any like CE level raider that played in Legion, they will tell you that Legion had a rocky start, but despite that, it still had one of the highest rates of participation.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been a proponent for a long time on this podcast, that Mythic had tuned the fun bits out of Mythic. Like there are bosses that just would be fun if you got to kill them, you know, at pull 100 or 150, not 300. So like I'm very on board with them like tuning it down, like very, very on board with that. On the flip side, there are bosses like Helandris that I wish they hadn't nerfed as hard. But like if the rest of the bosses in the raid weren't as hard as they were, I think Helandris might not have been gutted in the way that it was.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the other thing too, is I think you can have a Helandris like encounter if it's one of eight like that.
Yeah.
Not if it's like the fourth encounter or the first encounter of five you have to get through that are all very similar. Right.
Yeah.
In terms of difficulty.
Yeah.
But no, this is, I mean, definitely a sort of a good change. We'll know that we know a little bit more about the first raid, which is fun. We know that tokens are continuing, which is great. So tier sets are all sort of coming back and continuing. I don't think there's been no data mining of tier set bonuses just yet.
Correct.
For any of the classes, but
weird to get tier set bonuses before we got talents, I'll say.
That is true. That's true. But I mean, you never know with Blizzard designers, good raid content. So like, you know, raids will hopefully continue being fun, maybe not as also punishing.
In the dungeon journal, there are actually trinkets.
Oh, there are.
Text. Oh, we're not going to talk about them today, but I'm going to mention that there are trinkets.
Yeah, I don't think I added that into our notes to talk about. I thought we'd have enough to to fill the time.
Oh no, we still got tons left.
Yeah. So I mean, I think raid wise, I think group loot being back is great. You know, tokens continuing, I think is cool. So I think that's sort of the fun part of that. The other thing I think that there was another sort of interview given, if you want to jumping around a little bit, so out of the raid stuff, but back up to like some of the party buff conversations, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that like, the Blizzard is continuing to add additional like raid or party buff utility, we can call it, or like uniqueness, right, to classes. So Rogue's got a unique talent that reduces your offensive cooldown CDR of your raid. I think it's based on combo points used, right? I think that's the way that it works.
Yeah, spending combo points reduces cooldowns.
Yeah. You know, there's of course PI from Priests, which is continuing on. That's in their tree. Invokers get movement CDR, I think movement ability CDR too.
You have a button that you can push that lets everybody for the next 10 seconds cast their major, like their personal movement button once. So right. Like for a mage, it lets you blink. For an evoker, it lets you cast hover again. I assume for a monk, it would let you roll.
Yeah, it's roll for monks. I saw a list of it somewhere, and roll was the monk one. Yeah.
I don't know what it does for priests.
Yeah, I don't. Because feathers are a talent, aren't they? Or are they baseline?
They're a talent.
Yeah. I wonder what I didn't. I don't. I maybe I can pull up the list as we're talking here, but. But no, Blizzard sort of, I think it was Ian specifically, went into the idea of these things, right? And he gives a pretty...
Priest is life grip, apparently.
Oh. So not their own personal one, but...
Yeah, it's very funny, too, because that's a talent, and it's in an awkward location, so people may not take it, and I don't know what happens.
That's hilarious. Yeah, so I think Ian gives a pretty, like, we'll say, like, measured response, right? Which is, like, the idea of being, like, generally speaking, external buffs are very, like, the requirement for utilizing these external buffs, or, like, the requirement around them and some of the pressure around them really comes from the community and not actually from the designers of the game, right? Which,
yeah,
I agree. Like, generally, I will say I agree with, right? Like, the idea that, like, I think in a lot of cases, and I've said this in some of the conversations I've had, is that, like, if we limit the cool stuff that Blizzard potentially can do by, like, saying this is bad for the game, or this now makes, like, rogues have to take this talent. You have to have a rogue in your raid group to do this. And even if the boss is killable without rogues, but the community perception is you need to have rogues, it creates a very, like, toxic relationship really between the players and Blizzard in terms of, like, well, then does Blizzard try and make these cool things anymore, right? Because, like, adding CDR to offensive abilities to rogues is a cool, unique utility.
It's one that I am very scared of, though, because that could get out of hand.
No, and I think there's always, like, the tuning around it, but the idea that, like, if Blizzard was too scared to make, like, to implement something like this, right, we wouldn't get cool. I don't know. I'd rather them make something that is overpowered and broken for a patch and then them scale it back or remove it versus, like, leaving it on the drawing board and never letting it come to light, right?
I don't know that I totally agree with that because of the fact that that means we had to deal with it for a patch. Like, do you remember how Fire Mage was in Nyalotha with the Bracers and the Font of Power and the Mastery Corruption? And just, like, it was dramatically harder to do basically every encounter in the whole raid unless you had one or two Fire Mages to push combustion and just delete a mechanic for you. And, like, it was cool that they got to do, you know, push a button, delete a mechanic. But at the same time, if we had our Fire Mage or Fire Mages at various points out for whatever reason, it was way harder. Way harder.
Yeah. And I think that is, like, the extreme end of the spectrum, right? So, like, dealing with that, I would agree with you that said that is probably the wrong way to tune it. But the same point of, like, my point is, like, if there's a chance that the rogue CDR thing becomes a mandatory thing that lets you delete a mechanic, is that worthy enough for never even trying it? Like, I don't know.
I would say that if they're willing to tune it more, if they're willing to jump on it faster. Like, if they're willing to actually do tuning mid-patch, then I think it's fine. But that also comes down to, I think that there are two halves to, like, the PI group buffs thing that goes on. One half is the community, for sure. There's the whole, like, people want to parse, and when people want to parse, PI obviously helps you do that. People throw out some really wacky numbers for how much damage you gain for PI. I've seen some people try to claim it's, like, 30% for getting PI.
Quote unquote, the Innervate spreadsheet that I think I modified a version of the Innervate spreadsheet, like, back in Legion, that basically said monks are the best Innervate targets.
Yeah.
Just, like, stupid, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, nobody gets 30% for having PI. Literally no one. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. The highest in theory in Sims is 11%, and that's a Venthyr Fire Mage. And so.
Makes sense.
Like, PI is way less important for rankings than people give it credit for, unless you're trying to go for literally rank one, in which case PI and other externals are a huge, huge obstacle.
Right.
But then the other half is actually raid tuning. And this, I think, Sepulchre is a really good example of that, where in previous tiers, my team had been pretty lax about how we used PI. Like, it was something where on prog, yeah, we would probably assign it if there's a DPS check that we needed to make, mm-hmm. but we weren't trying to like necessarily min-max it to an insane degree. Like, I think if you look at our Sylvanas kill VOD, there's like at the end of Sylvanas, we're doing the final burn, we're in Bloodlust, and the priest goes, PI is up, who I put it on. And it takes a second. Like, it's not planned out. We haven't figured out who we're putting it on there. It's the raid lead, you know, goes, oh, just throw it on me. And he goes, wait a second. No. Divisive has CDs. Put it on Divisive. And, like, that's the kind of thing where now, this tier, we assigned it on literally every fight.
Gotcha.
Every single use. And that's because of the difference in tuning.
Yeah.
And the tuning also matters for them, their ability to nerf things. Because if they think the raid is so difficult that you have to have the OP ability in order to, or the OP spec in order to clear it, then they're going to be gun shy about nerfing things. But if they're like, no, you can definitely clear it without having, you know, 100% combustion uptime or convoke every 10 seconds or whatever rogues end up doing with their CDR button.
Yeah.
Then they will just nerf it because they know they can. And it might make it harder, but taking it from like completely trivialized to being like appropriate difficulty is a lot different from taking it from being kind of overbearingly difficult to even more overbearingly difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd agree with that point of view too. Is it definitely depends on what the fights look like. I don't know. I temper this sort of sentiment in the fact that, like, I think I'm fine with Blizzard playing this game long enough. I realize that every spec will go up and down. So, like, the idea that this one ability in this point in time is super overpowered and broken, eventually it'll get changed, nerfed, or potentially removed. And I'd rather Blizzard play around with, like, adding stuff like this versus being like, all right, we're going to add the offensive CDR ability, but rogues are going to get it, and then, like, maybe mages get it, and then maybe, like, I don't know, shaman get it, right? And that way you can bring whatever you want, but we spread it around. Like, I think that creates a situation where, like, you're introducing a brand new mechanic to three classes. And now, like, if it's overpowered, you have three more chances to use it, but then you have to, like, nerf it three more times, right? And so...
Yeah. I will say, I don't want them to, like, not experiment with new abilities, because even stuff at, like, the... there has been a long tail of the shenanigans that came from the revamp of Brewmaster and Legion to move it more into managing stagger. And like, stagger is the core mechanical identity. Where like in pre-Legion, for those that aren't familiar with it, stagger was a significantly lower percent. And it was literally just trying to take the edge off of your hits. It wasn't taking, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90% of the damage and spreading it out. Turns out that taking 90% of your damage as a dot instead of upfront damage is actually super insane. And they have literally like, it kind of flew under the radar at the beginning of Legion because Prot Warrior was nuts. And also with it being revamped, there was a lot of like people not understanding how to play it. But then like by the end of Legion, it was like clearly busted and it got nerfed every single patch in BFA. Every single patch in BFA. It got nerfed twice in Legion as well. It got nerfed so many times, and Brewmaster still right now is one of the best tanks.
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes those things are really difficult for them to balance.
Yeah. Which is always the scare, I think.
Some of it is, like, raid tuning. If they nerf Brewmaster too hard and you've committed to playing Brewmaster this tier for your like mythic guild, if they nerf it too hard and now you can't like kill a boss or it's way harder to kill the boss with a Brewmaster, that's a problem.
Yeah. And I think, that's fair. I mean, I guess we'll see like how, at least in this point, like the rogue ability works out and how, like the Invoker stuff fits into like the general meta about what the community considers required. But I mean, it's cool that they're experimenting more with like CDR stuff, which I think I don't know about you, but for me, it's been like the more interesting part of like the new stuff they've added into at least this expansion with like the legendaries and some of like the conduits and stuff like that, adding that in. So
there's a lot of CDR floating around. Yeah. Like Brewmaster is heavily oriented around CDR in BFA, and I think also in Legion. Protection Paladin was oriented heavily around CDR. Fire Mage has the Kindling build, which is hugely CDR reliant. Brewmaster right now has it Walk with the Ox Conduit that makes us get CDR on Invoke Niazaoth that sometimes is worth playing around. There's a bunch of actually like CDR or cooldown extension. It's the other big one of like, you know, you do this thing and your cooldown lasts longer. You know, Prot Paladin has that for Ardent Defender. You have Ardent Defender up and you actually pushing Shield of the Righteous makes it last longer and reduces the cooldown for extra fun. But then that's like the Frost Mage thing with their Necrolord cooldown, like doing, I don't know what they do. I haven't played Frost, but they do something and it makes their Necrolord cooldown last longer. And so the goal is that you extend your Icy Veins and your Necrolord cooldown so long that you just push them again when they expire.
Just keep it up. That's hilarious. Yeah. No, yeah, it's, I mean, I'm excited to see what sort of potential builds come out of this, or like what sort of like priority we put on having rogues with this talent and stuff like that. And I mean, PI doesn't seem like it's going away. I think it's nice that priests now get the ability to keep PI as long as they cast on someone else. It seems like that.
Yeah, they're getting the idol legendary that, or what is it? Twin Moon? I don't know.
I think it's like Twin Priestess or Twin Moon. Yeah, something like that. But where like if they cast PI on another target, it actually also casts it on them as a player. That's like a nice to have, and it seems like that talent isn't too hard to get in every build.
Yeah, that's going to make the feel bad of being like a priest that wants to keep your own PI for your own purposes. It's going to reduce that a little bit. Mm-hmm. If priests aren't the best PI target, though, you're still going to end up in a situation where like I'm stuck PIing this mage or this warlock, and when they need it for their cooldown, it's not when I need it for my cooldown. So I still am not really getting PI.
Yeah, it's the sync up issue with that is rough. So, we'll see. Like Blizzard basically has said like that's a community problem. The fact that there's only one sort of PI, we still think it's a cool ability. It's to the log sites and the to figure out who the best player is, which your Warcraft, you put up a little poll this week, bud.
There's a poll. I am not allowed to talk about the poll results.
I'm not asking you the results, but I will say I gave Argo my feedback on what you guys should do.
The only thing I will say about the poll is that the do nothing option has very few votes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so my point of view real quick on this is that it should probably be something where like you have the max no holds barred ranking, but you maintain a second no PI or limited external buff ranking too, where you set some sort of like arbitrary, you had less than two external buffs, you know, over the course of this fight, or like you had less than one a minute. And like, that's the essentially the true ranking. So
I personally am partial to the the option of making it so it's capped. So like you can get PI from a priest, and that's the most you can do. That handles a lot of the outlier cases that people complain about, like the 79 external buff warlock from Sanctum.
Yeah.
that can't happen if you limit it to one external from a source. So like, and that's mostly in line with how you would use it on progression, where like it's generally better to, if you have two PIs that you can give out, you put one on one person and one on the other person, and doing it like that still gives both of them a ranking at the end of the day. It kind of sucks if you are doing progression on the boss and you're doing progression knowing that you cannot get a real ranking, and for all intents and purposes, if there's a split in the leaderboards between like with externals and without externals, one of them is going to be the real one and the other is going to be the not real one as far as the community is concerned. And maybe there will be some people that are like, no, this other one's the real one, but they're going to be a small minority.
Yeah. So it's almost better to like,
so it's almost like if you just do a split of like no externals versus all externals, like one of those is going to be the real one, one of them is not. It's probably going to be the no externals one that is the real one. And so for all intents and purposes, killing a boss with a PI on you is going to be a not, you don't rank. you're in the other leaderboard.
Yeah, which I guess in that case, your idea is like cap it is the most appropriate way because it dictates how it should probably be used.
That is my opinion. That doesn't translate necessarily to how group buffs work. Like if the Wind Fury Totem is pretty big for a couple of specs, but it's not PI big and it's also not single target. So it's a lot easier to get your hands on the Wind Fury Totem because four people get a Wind Fury Totem with one shaman. So the one person getting a PI with one priest. But if like the rogue CDR thing ends up being even bigger than Wind Fury Totem, then there's new questions of like, how do we manage this?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Interesting topic. Like I said, I think I'm all for weird stuff that Blizzard's doing. Hopefully it's not too overpowered, or at least hopefully they'll make changes more quickly, right? Like keep on top of like balancing and stuff like that. So we are at time, unfortunately, for this episode. And we didn't even get, I guess in terms of like other stuff we had on our notes. A couple of other interview stuff. We didn't even talk about my favorite part of any new expansion is the art. And so like, I think maybe we spend some time.
I'll pull up real quick. We have the art for the monk tier set. We've got the actual models. We got the concept art. And we did confirm tier sets are coming back. But this tier set, I don't think the helm turned out quite the way they wanted it to. But the rest of the set looks pretty good, I think.
Yeah. It's too, and maybe it's just because it's on a human, but it's too big.
Yeah, you look at the concept art, is clearly not on a human or is on a very slim human. Right. And so the set, for those that are listening, this is your like edgy bandage kind of vibe for a monk. The shoulders, of course, have balls on them. There's always balls on the monk set. The helm has kind of a like beak, for a lack of a better word. It's clearly supposed to be like some kind of like dragon snout, but it looks more like a bird. It looks like a bird man.
It looks almost Moon Knight-ish if you've seen that the Marvel show.
But the set does look cool. I like it. I'm definitely going helm off with this, but I like the rest of it.
Yeah, I think the only problem with helm off is I think you lose like the trailing. Hopefully it's physics based, but there's almost like a headband that's tied around that has really long strings out the back. You're visualizing this, and like that probably flows or has some physics on it. Which I think looks pretty cool. But
Berthy in chat says it has some shredder vibes to it, which I think is accurate.
Yeah, that's actually a better analogy. It's definitely shredder. So, we have those art, and I think we didn't even get a chance to talk about the actual zone itself, which all the screenshots I've seen, it looked really pretty. And
it's really good.
We didn't even talk about professions.
We didn't talk about the quest at all. There's a bunch more. And of course, we have in one of the Ian interviews that we didn't talk about, we know that they are planning to test a different zone next week.
Yep.
Planning to and actually do are, of course, two different things in the world of alpha software. But probably going to be testing a different zone next week.
Yeah. Which will be fun. Hopefully by wave 3, which has been my typical wave, I'll be able to partake with testing.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Maybe we'll even get a dungeon so we can do like preservation and Nom and like, I don't know what else I would think, but
I'm going to boycott playing preservation and alpha just as a, even beta just as a thing. Like I'm monk.
What if there's no monk talents by the time you get alpha?
Are you gonna there will be monk talents in 3 weeks, bud. Calling it here. I may have heard something. I may not have heard of something. All I'm saying is it's in 3 weeks. So
I hope it's sooner, honestly. But
me too. But I'm saying end of first week in August. That's when I'll get in, and that's when monks start. So,
all right. Well, that is going to be it for the show today. Thank you all for listening and or watching. And if you enjoyed this show and you want to support it and the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. And of course, come and join the Discord. It's great. Lounges. I have not actually looked at Lounge today. I have no idea what they're doing.
No F1 race.
No F1 race.
So that's
they're probably just talking about actually Dragonflight stuff is what I would guess if I had to guess. But yeah, that is it for the show today. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.